I learned a lot about who I don't want to be, what my values are, where the lines are that I will not cross, and having a sense of purpose. And I think that's really important in terms of how I lead other people, because I have integrity in that space.
Hello and welcome to the Medical Women Podcast, the podcast from the Medical Women's Federation, the largest body of women doctors in the UK. I'm Dr. Nuthana Bayankaram. I'm the Vice President of MWF, and I have the honour and joy of being your host, as each week we hear from wonderful guests to help you feel more empowered and confident on your medical career journey. Hello, everyone. I hope that you are all doing well. Happy first day of spring for those who are in the UK. I don't know about you, but I've really enjoyed seeing all the daffodils and the blossom. There's just something about this time of year. It just seems like a time of lots of new possibilities and starting new things. And just, yeah, everything just feels a lot happier and brighter to me. And of course, today is the spring equinox. So the days are getting longer and yeah, just everything just feels more possible, I think, which fits very well with this season, which is all about exploring possibilities. And I'm recording this fresh from our MWF spring conference, which we held on the Medall app. So it was a virtual conference. We had about 130 delegates joining us and lots of people who have been posting on social media that they're catching up on the replays. It was a really, really good conference. The like panel discussions were really interesting, just lots of different topics and wonderful presentations from our medical students particularly, who had done some fantastic projects. I found it really, really hard to be a judge for the poster and oral presentations because they were just all wonderful and such high quality, and I wanted to give everybody a prize. And I'm currently in the process of marking the Catherine Branson essays as well. And again, just blown away by the quality of all the essays. It's really quite difficult to mark when they're all such high quality, but it's also such a joy as well. So well done to everybody who has submitted things, and we'll be letting you know soon if you've won a prize. And thank you also so much for all of you who very kindly got raffle tickets. I have to say, it was really exciting doing the spinning the wheel of the raffle. I think we all really enjoyed it. But yes, congratulations to everybody who won a prize. We will be getting all of those out to you shortly. Thank you so much for your generosity. I will let you know once we've worked out how much money we've raised. So this week we are speaking to Dr. Mary-Anne Farreau, who has had a really interesting career. She's worked in the UK and in Australia. And I found it really interesting hearing from her about the differences in training and how in Australia there's a whole specialty that's about medical leadership and management, which doesn't exist here. We kind of, you know, are expected to sort of learn it as we go along. But I thought that was really interesting that they had a structured approach. So I really enjoyed speaking to her about that. We spoke about, you know, how she got on in her leadership journey, the lessons that she would want to share. And also, I just want to really thank Mary-Anne because she brought up some topics that I think, you know, usually we kind of shy away from as a society. So one of the things she spoke about was kind of doing it all and sort of, you know, being superwoman and doing lots and lots of things and not really looking after ourselves and burning out. But another thing that she spoke about was on the topic of infertility or just thinking about family planning, I suppose. We were discussing, you know, we have like long training programs and lots of medical women will put other life plans on hold whilst they've got their training. And I think it is something that affects more people than we realize, but because we don't really speak about it, we don't know how much of a problem it is. But if, you know, if we are wanting to have a career and have a family and we are biologically women, then there are lots of things that we need to think about, really. And I was very grateful that Marianne brought this up, because I think it's a really important thing that needs to be spoken about, but it is something that we don't often get the chance to speak about. And as you know, regular listeners will know that on this podcast, I really like us to speak about the things that are really important, but usually don't get spoken about. So I was very, very grateful to Marianne that she brought up that topic and that we were able to have that discussion. So I hope that you find this episode really helpful. As always, please do keep sharing the podcast, and I would really love it if you could take a couple of moments to rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts. It really, really helps other people to know that we exist. And I hope that you all have a wonderful week and enjoy this episode. And I will see you again next week. Take care. So it's lovely to have with me today, Dr. Marianne Farreau. Welcome to the podcast, Marianne. Would you like to introduce yourself for our listeners?
Yeah, happy to. My name's Marianne Farreau, and I am the current medical director for the Kent, Surrey and Sussex Academic Health Science Network, and I'm based down in Kent.
Wonderful. And can you tell us a little bit more about what that role involves?
Yeah, so the role that I'm currently in is essentially the innovation arm for the NHS. So we do a lot of work with both NHS organisations and partnerships with industry, the research world, academia, digital, new technologies that are coming through. So a really exciting space, probably an area that people don't know a huge amount about, but, you know, it's great to be involved in the work of the organization. And also, you know, just it's such an important area in terms of the future of the NHS and how we're actually able to better meet patient needs for the future. So yeah, it's a really exciting space.
Yeah, it sounds very exciting. And how, like, can you tell us a bit more about your career path and how you ended up doing that?
Yeah, my career path has been a journey. So it's a bit of an unusual pathway, and it's probably because I didn't really know what I wanted to be. So most people come out of medical school and kind of go, oh, I want to be a surgeon, or I want to be a GP. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I did my medical school training and F1 and F2 at Liverpool, and, you know, enjoyed my time there, lived in Liverpool for about 10 years. And then came out of F2, and we kind of had to decide which CCT pathway we were going to do. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. And so I did what a lot of people do. I decided to go and take a year off and go to Australia. So went to a place called Newcastle, which is about 2 hours north of Sydney. And you know, thought I'll just do a 1 year working holiday, was able to do a number of different specialties in that year, and thought, okay, well, I'll be ready to come back and choose what I wanted to do. But of course, went to Australia and loved it, and decided not to come back at all. and actually ended up staying in Australia for 13 years rather than 1 year. So during my time in Australia, because it is just more of a relaxed system, I was able to just get a lot of different experiences. So I worked in, I was a psychiatry registrar, I was a general medical registrar, I worked in obstetrics and gynecology and pediatrics. So I had sort of some thoughts about maybe going into general practice. And then I was working as in A&E as a registrar for about 5 years. Had my first two children whilst I was doing that role. Really just found it really quite a family-friendly atmosphere, given that the shifts could sort of fit around childcare and things like that. So that really worked for me. And during that time, I started a Masters of Public Health And my main research focus was on the social determinants of health and the impact of various different factors on people presenting to A&E and people being admitted to hospital. So it was really around a situation that I regularly saw in A&E where you'd have two people with the same condition, but one person was admitted to hospital and one person would go home. So I really wanted to find out why we managed people differently and what were the factors that were protective or exacerbating factors in that. And that linked me with the medical director of the hospital, who also had a public health background. And I initially just sort of went over to speak to her about my research project. And we got talking about my career, and I'd never really had any mentoring or coaching or anything like that. And she was just really, really fantastic and really helpful. And she mentioned to me about, you know, whether I'd thought about going into leadership, medical leadership, which is its own specialty in Australia. It doesn't really exist in the UK, but it's called medical administration. And at that point, she sort of discouraged me from going into public health because this is pre-COVID and there were no public health jobs. So she mentioned, oh, you know, that there's a training position going over here. And I thought about it. And so I applied for it and got onto the training program. And it was a vertical learning period for me, going into management and leadership of health systems. So, you know, a lot of things, particularly around governance. Mm-hmm. So hospital level governance, system level governance, these are things they don't really teach you in medical school.
No.
So managing people, they don't really teach you that. Business planning, health service planning. So these were all things that, you know, had never really learned about, but obviously incredibly important and really interesting from my perspective. It's not for everybody, but, you know, I found it really interesting. And so that's sort of how I entered management and leadership. And then, interestingly, I then became the medical director of that hospital when my mentor moved on to another role. So that's sort of how I entered leadership. And then during COVID, we just decided from a family perspective that we wanted to come back to the UK. And so that's how I came back over and was in a role that was in sort of integrated urgent care. So had some great experience sort of understanding primary care, particularly after hours primary care and the challenges around that and the challenges for our GPs. And also NHS 111 service. So that was really interesting. So both sort of backgrounds in terms of hospitals and primary care. So yeah, you know, it's been a really interesting journey, not really very well planned or thought out, just quite opportunistic. So, you know, I think that there are lots of different ways to move forward with your career. And, you know, sometimes having things planned out is really helpful and really useful to focus on a pathway. But I think there's also room, because we have such a long career, there's also room for us to meander. And, you know, it's a marathon, not a sprint, is sort of what I tell my mentees. So, you know, if you want to try things out and see where, you know, other opportunities or have other experiences, you know, I'd strongly recommend it. There's no wasted time. It will all help you in your career and in your personal development and growth moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just fascinating hearing the different things that you've done. And it's so interesting to hear that they have a whole specialty in Australia that is specifically about the leadership and management of running hospitals. Because as you say, we don't really learn about those things in medical school or during our postgraduate training. I am also one of these people that would be very interested in learning like business planning and how you organize different systems and things. But I appreciate that people wouldn't. So that's interesting to hear that in other healthcare systems, they have that. and then working out a way of how we incorporate that into training here, because we're just expected by the time we're consultants to run departments and become directors of things. And in terms of your experience of being a medical director of that hospital, there's so many things that I could ask you about that. but yeah, how, I guess you'd had a little bit of training, but.
Yeah, probably
still lots of things that you kind of just had to pick up when you were doing the job.
Definitely. So, I mean, there's only so much you can read in a book or get from a lecture. So there's the theory component, and then there's the practical component, as in any medical specialty. So when I became a medical director, and this is of an acute hospital, tertiary level cancer center, you know, I was 33 years old. So the youngest medical director they'd ever had. I was the only person of colour they had ever had. They'd had women in the past. So the two previous directors to me had been women, mm-hmm. but over the age of 55. So, you know, I'm there on my first day as a young Black woman walking in, and yeah, it was challenging, and I had my, you know, direct management of 14 clinical directors, 12 of them were men over 60 who had been there many, many, many years. So, you know, I'm sure that for both of us, for both parties, were apprehensive. And, you know, it's how do you manage and lead, you know, a group who are quite different from you, you know, and it for me, it was really about building trust, and by building trust, building respect as well. But we have to come at it from a very, you know, humanistic perspective. And some of it takes time. So, you know, I was very lucky in that I had one particular clinical director that I'd known for a number of years, and he was a fantastic advocate. And I think we talk about male advocacy a lot, don't we, in how we support women in leadership. And I would absolutely say that he was my advocate, and he was able to assist me in building that trust and assist me within, you know, some difficult conversations and meetings that we had to have as a group. You know, they're often conversations people don't want to have, and it's about doing more work and cutting money, you know, and that's not what any clinical director wants to hear about their department. You know, everyone needs more. Everyone does need more resources and more workforce. So, you know, they're really challenging conversations. So having support in that, given that it was my first director role, you know, was incredibly important. You know, as with any job, any role as a consultant, you learn from your mistakes. You learn what not to do. I think as you sort of go higher up in leadership, I probably learned more about what not to do from other people. Mm. There are, you know, we have to be realistic. There were some really poor behaviours at the top of organisations, health organisations. And I think I learned a lot about who I don't want to be, what my values are, where the lines are that I will not cross, and having a sense of purpose. And I think that's really important in terms of how I lead other people, because I have integrity in that space. It instills a level of confidence with other people that I'm leading. And so, you know, people are prepared to sort of work together and be more collaborative and be flexible, and have understanding that, you know, it's for it's for the bigger picture. It's not, yes, individually I might feel like I'm missing out or losing out, but actually it's, we're all working towards the same goal. And I think that's really important. But yeah, it's a really challenging space. And I think that we need more younger people going into leadership, because I think that what we're sorely lacking in the health service is new ideas, new ways of doing things. And when we talk about wanting to have more inclusive cultures, then we need to change from what we've done in the past, and we need to break those old boys clubs and demonstrate that we can do things differently and still be effective and still, you know, be able to give great patient care and also a great clinician experience. We want happy workers. I want people to enjoy their job. I want them to come to work and enjoy being there. And if people aren't, then we're doing something wrong in leadership.
Yeah, and I think at the moment, I think it feels particularly difficult kind of coming out of the pandemic and just, yeah, I think, you know, when you look at all like the news stories about health, but just from speaking to people or just being in the hospital, it feels like we're being asked to do more and more and more with fewer and fewer resources. It is difficult for staff.
Absolutely. And people, for me, it's, you know, people's well-being has got to be paramount. You know, we can't keep breaking people. So, you know, I've done lots of different strategies, particularly the things that I've been passionate about during my leadership career has been around the well-being of medical students and trainees.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, done lots of different initiatives whilst I was working in Australia around that, because, you know, particularly our trainees, they're the engine room of any health system. You know, really keep the whole system going. So if we're not looking after them, then, you know, there's big problem. So it is, but, you know, at the moment, I just have absolute sympathy with everyone who's working, you know, across the NHS at the moment, really, really challenging times. And, you know, we really need to be looking out for each other and making sure that people are okay. I have to say, one of the things that I have been heartened with, so when I've implemented things around ED&I, it's probably the only time I've seen kind of a lift in mood. And it might be the way in which we've approached it, in terms of putting some real actions, not just a position statement that, or a policy that sits, you know, that's pinned to the wall that no one pays attention to, but real action, you know, real change. I have seen people who are really burnt out, they still want to participate and they still want change to happen. And so I think that, you know, there's some amazing, I hate to use the word resilience, but there is, you know, there are just some amazing people who work across the NHS who, you know, are prepared to give so much to the service and to the system, but also to participate in some of these really difficult change elements that need to happen. And I think that whole space of equality, diversity, inclusivity, and the impact on health inequalities is something that we absolutely have to work on together. And, you know, particularly within the medical fraternity, I've seen real effort to make change happen in that space. So, you know, I find that just incredibly positive for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is really positive. And I think, you know, post-pandemic, we've all realised the importance of every specialty has responsibility to do some public health and to help tackle the inequalities, which unfortunately have, you know, the gaps have widened even further with the pandemic. I want to ask you a little bit about you know, like women in leadership. And just before we started recording, you mentioned that when you'd had, you know, your children as a trainee, it was, you felt a lot more supported than when you'd had your third child when you were in a leadership mm-hmm. position. And we've spoken before about how that in leadership positions, sometimes, you know, they don't give you the option of flexible working. And so if we are wanting more diverse and inclusive leadership, which we do, because, you know, it shows time and time again that more inclusive and diverse groups have better outcomes for patient care, outcomes for organizations, then we need to build the structures that support that. So I just wonder if you could speak a bit about what your experience has been there.
Yeah, so I had my first child, I had my first son when I was 28. And I've always known I wanted kids. So I guess from my perspective, I probably in my head prioritized that within my personal and professional life and said, yeah, that's something that I really want to achieve. And I really wanted to have a family, more so than my career at that point in time. So I happened to be working in A&E, obviously it's shift work, and it just kind of, again, unplanned, just kind of worked out. I have a very supportive partner. My husband's incredible. And yeah, we were just able to make that work. I went back to work after 9 months part-time and had my second child a year later. So they're about 17 months apart, and then went back to work again. I think I had about 7 or 8 months off after my second son. Again, you know, I'm very lucky. I had a partner to help me, but the pattern of work meant that I could work how I wanted to fit around my family. And the department that I happened to work in was also very supportive of whatever shifts I wanted. Essentially, I was happy, you know, they were happy to support me in that. And I was kind of sort of sat in a supernumerary position. So, you know, they were happy to fit me in where I wanted to go. In the end, it worked out for both of us. I wanted nights and weekends, which no one wanted to work. And, you know, so it worked out for both parties, but very supportive environment, very family friendly, consultants, you know, family was quite a big element of that, the culture within that department. So, you know, I was very lucky in that experience. I had a number of friends in a number of different other specialties that had non-existent support. So I had people who worked in surgery, people worked in pediatrics, people who worked in critical care, who had a completely different experience at the same time as me, in the same organization as me, but the culture was very different and was not as supportive. So, you know, completely understand the challenges across the board. I then thought that my baby days were over, and really got knuckled down to my career. So obviously joined this training program in medical leadership, still kept a clinical role. So I was working an insane number of hours. So I was working full time. Plus, I did one or two days extra as clinical, and I was doing a master's full time. I wouldn't recommend doing that.
How did you manage to fit all that into 24 hours and also sleep?
Yeah. And I had my second child, didn't sleep through the night till he was 4 or 5 either. So I think I was probably running on fumes. And as I said, I would not recommend it. But I think sometimes when you are a woman and you kind of feel like, oh, I've now got this as my career pathway. I honestly at the time didn't think that there was any other option but to do it this way. And I thought, I've just got to get it done as quickly as possible. I've just got to fit everything in. And what I realized was that you can't fit everything in. Something will lose out. So it was actually the time with my kids that I lost out on. You know, I missed out on taking my second son to the first day of school. I don't think I went to his school for his first year. Never did any pick up or drop off. So, you know, you miss out on things that you'll never get back again. And they're regrets that I have that, you know, and hence why I wouldn't recommend it to anybody. But at the time, I don't think I felt I had any other option but to kind of just power through and be a superwoman. But, you know, it's not good for your health and well-being either. So I then moved into a medical director role. And whilst I was in my third year as a medical director, I had a surprise pregnancy. Very welcome, very happy, but obviously a surprise. So by that point, I was nearing 40. And very different experience. So was shocked to realize that, you know, just basic things like maternity leave, being supported to come back to work on a part-time basis, being supported in a job share are all things that are generally not available to someone at that level. So had to fight for everything, literally had to fight for everything. Was pretty stressful, created, you know, friction obviously with my boss, who's the CEO, and, you know, was a really challenging time. And I think it's just not, you know, most women, if they get to leadership, they're not at childbearing age, are they? You know, they're sort of later in life. And so it just, you know, you're kind of breaking another glass ceiling just being there and having a baby.
And you were saying before that like your two predecessors, even though they'd been women, they were like over 55. So you were quite young. And it just shows, I guess, that the systems haven't been built for young women of childbearing age. So it shows even more that we need to change those systems.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, this is where I think workforce planning really needs to be thought about, is the feminization of the workforce has fundamentally changed, you know, what the workforce structures need to be to support women in an inclusive way. So, you know, I remember some years ago, most women who were doctors only had one child. But now I think the average is up to sort of 2.3. So we're now having between two and three babies. So that's two or three periods of maternity leave. And then we might want to come back part-time. But the structures that are in place are still on the assumption of usually men working a full-time job. But both men and women now don't want to. We actually would like to be with our children and have time with them. And so we need more people. So the headcount is just not, you know, correct for covering the same number of hours. And the same can be said, you know, right the way through up into leadership. So those leadership structures, you know, have been built for men, you know, by men for men, and they haven't necessarily included women. And so, you know, when it comes to quite basic things relating to family-friendly environments that are inclusive for women, and, you know, basic rights in relation to maternity and paternity leave, it can be really challenging in that space. And what sort of makes me sad is that even from a training perspective, it's still thought of as best to get your training done as quickly as possible and not to spread it out over years and years. So, you know, I have got two friends who are in surgeons who froze their eggs because they're worried that when they did have time to actually start a family, that there would be issues in relation to them getting pregnant and their fertility. And I think that fertility issues for women in medicine are not talked about. The impact of having to do the length of training and the intensity of training is not really talked about in terms of how it could potentially impact your ability to have children later in life. And then, you know, what support do we offer people when they're in their jobs and going through IVF?
Mm.
So, you know, I think some of these things are not are kind of not really talked about. I mean, we're only just starting to have the conversation about menopause.
Yeah.
And the impact of menopause. So, you know, I think that there are a lot of gender inequalities within the workplace that we still need to, you know, make change on. And I think that if women can come together and start to have discussions about some of these really important issues, then I think collectively we need to come together to make the change happen, because essentially we are the majority. Women are 51% of the population.
Yeah.
So these are things,
and 60% of the medical workforce,
of the new medical workforce. So we still got, you know, 30% of consultants are women, 30-35% women. So we still got some way for that 60% to come through, but they're coming. And so, you know, this change needs to happen, and it needs to happen quickly. So, you know, I think that any opportunity that we get where we can, you know, talk about these things openly and bring in our male advocates as well to advocate for some of these changes to happen within the workplace, you know, it would be fantastic moving forward.
Yeah, and thank you for bringing up that really important point, because you're right, we don't talk about these things. And yeah, the length of our training, the kind of hours and the shift pattern and things that we work, it does then mean that you know, if we are women who do want to think about having a family, both of like these things do impact on each other. And yeah, I have no idea on, you know, how many women in medicine do end up having IVF or freezing their eggs or things like that, but it's really important that we have these conversations. So,
yeah,
so thank you for bringing up that really important point.
And I think this is probably the topic that most people want to talk to me about. So most women who I meet want to talk to me about it. So they know that I've had children. They know that I'm in a leadership position. And, you know, they very, very frequently, it's trainees and students ask me, you know, how have you done it? How have you fitted it all in? How have you made it work? You know, on the surface, it can seem like you've got everything, right? The reality is, you know, it's a hot mess.
it's probably one of those swans, isn't it? It looks all
like... Yeah, of course it is. Exactly. You know, having three children is challenging. Having three children in medicine or in leadership is more so. And, you know, I'm extremely lucky to have a very, very supportive partner, and we have good communication and we make things work, you know, across our scheduling. So we're very lucky. But, you know, when we talk about can women have it all, I like to say women can have it all, but not all at once. Mm. And I think that was my mistake that I made a few years ago, is I tried to do everything at once and you will just burn out. It's too much.
Yeah.
You can have everything. You just need to spread it out. And and really think about. So when I do my mentoring, you know, particularly with women, you know, when we're putting together our professional development plans, I call them sort of personal growth plans. So rather than looking at, you know, your career and your life as two separate things, they're all one thing.
Mm.
So what's important to you now? What will be important to you in 5 years, in 10 years? And let's put all of those things in, you know, including your personal interests. You know, where do you want to go? What do you want to do? Because they're all important. It's what makes you a rounded human being. And will, you know, give you the life that you want, that makes you happy. I think that's the most important thing. If we want people to stay in their careers longer, which we do, because we need to start, you know, retaining people within the workforce, then we need to, you know, view them as rounded human beings who've got a lot going on in their lives, and help and support them in that journey. And not be afraid if they, you know, a flexibility of saying, okay, well, they only want to work part-time here and they want to go and do something completely different in another area. You know, the number of doctors that I see, young doctors who are entrepreneurs, wow, it's, you know, I think that's fantastic. And that all of that experience they can bring back into the health service, you know, in a way that we've never seen before.
Yeah.
So how can we support them in, you know, in having, I know that people want to call it portfolio career, but, you know, yeah, a diverse career, you know, being, you know, you don't have to just be a doctor anymore. You can be so much more than that. So, you know, I think, you know, supporting people in whatever the journey is that they want to take is what's really important.
Well, thank you so much, Marianne. It's been lovely having you on the podcast. Thank you so much for listening to the Medical Women podcast. Make sure to subscribe for free on whichever podcast platform you listen on so that you automatically get our episodes. The aim of this podcast is to support and empower as many medical women in their careers as we possibly can. So please share this episode with at least one other medical woman. If you're interested in joining the Medical Women's Federation, we would love to have you, and all links to our website and social media are in the show notes. This podcast has been produced on behalf of the Medical Women's Federation by Dr. Nathana Bayankaram and Miss Jenna McKenzie. Our music was composed and played by Dr. Kethke Bayankaram. Thank you so much for listening.